Don't have time to read that research paper you saved? Chelsea and Olivia want to help you out. We know how it is. That's why we read it for you. Welcome to the Exercise Science Too Long Didn't Read podcast.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. How's it going? This is Exercise Science Too Long Didn't Read podcast show with Olivia and Chelsea. Mm-hmm. We haven't introduced ourselves in a while, I realize. Sorry about that.
Hey. Well, welcome if you're new. Hopefully you enjoy our show. If you've been listening to our other episodes, thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. We very much appreciate it.
So today we're going to bring out another research paper. We took a couple episodes break from research papers, but today I found a paper on the psychological components of weight management. So past studies have shown the relationship with obesity and mental disorders like anxiety and depression. As we know, exercise has benefits for weight management and health.
And stress.
Mm-hmm. And mental health, so it can even help with anxiety and depression and other mental disorders.
And we here at the pod are no strangers to most of them.
That is very true. But today I found a paper that's a systematic review and a meta-analysis. So we're going to go, it's going to be a lot of information thrown your way. So hopefully we can
deep dive. Get ready, put your snorkels on, or not your snorkels, that's for light diving. Put on your mask, get your tanks filled.
Get that scuba gear.
Get ready. We are ready for scuba.
So we're going to talk about the psychological effects of exercise in overweight and obese individuals.
Excellent.
The name of the paper, Effect of Exercise Training on Psychological Outcomes in Adults with Overweight or Obesity, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. It's by a bunch of names that are very hard to pronounce. Caraca, Encantado, Batista, Beaulieu, Blundell, Bassetto, many more, and then Opert. It was published in 2021. So it was a last year paper, but we're still into the new year. So we'll get into the 2022 papers. Don't worry.
It's still a new baby fresh out.
It is.
The purpose of the study was to analyze exercise programs' effects on the psychological outcomes in overweight and obese individuals, which is excellent. Good job, fellas and ladies. Four research databases were utilized. All articles were published prior to October of 2019. The requirements for inclusion for those research databases were that the studies were researched adults, BMIs over 25 or 30, participation in supervised or semi-supervised exercise programs, and they tested one or more psychological outcomes. Studies that used combinations with exercise were excluded. What does that mean? They used combinations with exercise.
So like if they did counseling and exercise, if they did diet and exercise,
okay,
if they did more than one.
More than just exercise plus.
Right.
That makes sense. And the quality of the studies were assessed using the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute's tool.
All right.
So that's how they did it. What did they find?
Okay. So they found 36 studies that they included for the systematic review. And then 21 studies for the meta-analysis. So the studies were published from 2000 to 2019. Of the 36 studies for the systematic review, there were 3,536 participants.
Some of the studies might have been smaller, it looks like.
Maybe. The range for number of participants per study were 8 to 561.
Oh, see? There we go.
So very wide range of studies from small to large, and then even the time of the studies and the ages were very broad. So the mean ages for participants were 32 to 76. An average of the population was 74% were females. The mean BMI range was 27 to 44, and then the interventions ranged from 6 to 76 weeks.
Oh, that's a long time.
That is. So
it's more than a year, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, 52.
Yep.
I can math.
I was just about to say, how many weeks is in a year? Yeah. So that's crazy. And then 65% of the studies were supervised exercise programs, whereas 13 were aerobic only, 8 were resistance training only, and then 6 were combined exercise of aerobic and resistance.
Hmm.
Which is kind of surprising since the recommendation is to do both.
Yeah.
You would think more of the studies would do both.
But I like that they looked at each individual, though, because, you know, correlation does not necessarily mean causation. So it by looking at one, the other, and then combined, I think that gives a much clearer picture of what could be going on. But you're right.
That's true.
It is surprising that the majority of the studies were aerobic only and the smallest number were the combination.
Well, I mean, traditional research, I don't remember the timeline exactly, but I listened to a podcast once and they talked
about.
Well, this episode specifically talked about the history of research topics in exercise.
Nice.
Very interesting. I would tell you exactly what show it was, but I can't remember.
Fair enough.
sorry, guys.
But maybe if you find it again, you can put it in the show notes.
Maybe. Yeah, I could do that. But they talked about how most research until some point, maybe in the 1950s, 1940s, was all cardiovascular-based research and exercise. Hmm. So for a long time, people didn't know that strength training was good for you, because what was popular would be, they would be those like strong men at the circus and fairs and things, and those were the only people that were strong.
Well, and today we still fight rumors as women that strength training makes you bulky and mannish, and which it does not.
Right.
Most of us don't have enough testosterone for that to occur, so we just get leaner and stronger. So that makes sense, because we're still fighting those rumors today.
Right. Maybe 100 years from now, there will be more research on resistance training and it'll be more balanced. But that could be why there was more studies in aerobic training, because that's the traditional research method.
Mm-hmm.
Studies did have control groups, or they compared different exercise groups. So maybe some of the studies, like you were saying, they compared aerobic versus resistance, maybe even versus combined.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be the way I would do it. It'd be a very complicated study to put on, but that would probably be the best way to do it. Exercise time, get this, 12 to 90 minutes. 12 minutes.
Well, I guess if you're doing HIIT or Tabata, that's when the 12 aerobic, but 12 minutes of strength training or resistance training, it's not really going to do very much.
That's like two exercises.
Yeah.
If you're doing your rest time. That's interesting. They also did a frequency of 1 to 6 sessions per week, which is interesting. The one session a week.
Yeah, it's really not very much. You'd think that that would not yield really any noticeable results.
Yeah, from what I remember with research, they have shown that 1 to 2 exercise sessions per week is actually a hindrance. Because you're putting body through stress and your body doesn't get used to putting it through that stress. So you're putting it through unnecessary stress 1 to 2 days a week. So you don't see progress. You're just...
That's why you balance your recovery days with your working days. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and doing it regularly is very important as well. So I found that
I'm at 5 to 6 days a week. I mean, I don't want to brag.
I do 4 to 5. The exercise intensity was moderate to vigorous. That's kind of to be expected. I highly doubt they would study a lot of low intensity exercise, especially low intensity for 12 minutes. Psychological components that were assessed were health related quality of life, depression, body image, perceived pain, anxiety, life satisfaction, perceived stress, self-esteem, and mood. 20 of the 25 studies saw positive changes in quality of life. So that's good.
Yes.
Results for depression. There were 478 participants in 5 studies that assessed exercise effects on depression. So that's a lot of people in a few studies and very specific with depression.
And I'm sure a mixed bag on treatment options of how many of those were also on medication for it.
Mm-hmm. 2 studies showed improvement in depression scores.
Hmm.
There were no significant differences based on categories of exercise type, gender, age, and BMI. So, I shouldn't say that's
kind of good. It's a level playing field across
it is
all of those categories, which makes it a lot easier to apply, I was going to say like a treatment option, but just your exercise regimen that you prescribe for depression does not need to vary based on age, gender, et cetera.
Right.
So that's makes things easier. You're not playing on hard mode that way.
Mm-hmm. I do wonder, of the two studies that showed the improvements, how many participants were in those two studies, because there were five.
Oh, yeah.
So who knows? It could have been in the paper and I could have missed it.
Is that one of the ones that had eight or? Yeah,
exactly. Or was it one that had like 200?
Mm-hmm.
Results for body image. Body satisfaction increased in the combined exercise groups compared to the no intervention control groups. Makes sense.
Yeah.
No significant differences were made for body esteem when combined or combined with calorie restriction or diet changes alone. So body attractiveness was not changed in two studies that assessed it. So physical self-worth improved in a study that used a combination exercise.
I mean, that kind of makes sense. Yeah. I find like every time I'm able to move up in weights, like I feel stronger and I feel makes me feel more powerful and I feel good. Mm-hmm. And then with aerobic exercise, that is what really helps you burn more calories, which not without diet, not by itself necessarily, but that's kind of what helps you slim out a bit. So you're getting, you're seeing physical changes while you're feeling physical changes at the same time with the combined. My uneducated, unprofessional opinion anyway.
I think it's interesting that body attractiveness did not change.
Well, I think we all suffer from a bit of body dysmorphia.
That's true.
To some extent, just all of us. I mean, I know I do.
That's true. I think, I mean, everybody does to some extent. Because you, I mean, even if you improve in one area, you're still going to see.
You're going to nitpick and you're going to find something else.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, oh, my pants are a little looser and my waistline is a little slimmer, but God, my thighs are huge.
Yep, yep.
I don't have that problem. I have chicken legs, but.
It's like when you see a picture of yourself 10 years ago and you were skinnier then and you were like, I thought I was fat then. Look at me now.
Yeah. Dummy. Why did you think you were fat then? Things were great.
Yep. I should have enjoyed it while I had it.
Exactly.
So anxiety, my favorite subject. Three studies assessed anxiety. The study that utilized a walking program showed improvements in anxiety, while two studies that assess aerobics exercise and resistance exercise alone did not find a significant change.
Interesting. And I wonder if the walking, if it mattered if they were walking on a treadmill inside or if they were walking around outside. Because I could see it an outside walk having more impact than doing an aerobic or resistance training workout in a gym.
I can attest to doing it in a gym and outside because you're doing something repetitive for a long period of time, whether that's walking, running, cycling, elliptical, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives your mind the time it needs to just do what it wants.
Almost a meditative state, maybe.
Right. So cardio has always been that for me. I just let my mind, I can think about work and school and relationships and
read a book, family, watch a show on your phone.
No, I don't use that time to distract myself because then my...
I was just saying you could.
But my point is that it's almost like you were saying, that meditative time. So distracting your brain's not going to help your anxiety because you distract your
brain
from coping, I guess, if you will, all day long. So like when I was a runner, I would feel so much better after I ran. And I don't think it was just the endorphins. I think it was because I thought all my stuff out.
Yeah, I could see that. I play a lot of a game called Stardew Valley. Where's my SDV, folks? Whoop, whoop. And that's what I was explaining to my counselor. What it does for me is it's segmented into days. You play a day and you put yourself to bed at night. And they're about 10 to 15 minutes long. So it's perfectly segmented for my ADHD. It gives me clear stopping places so I can pay attention to the outside world if I need to, or stop playing if I need to, I don't know, go make dinner or whatever. But it gets me out of my head. And sometimes that's what I need more. I need the distraction because I'm really good at working myself up. So it pulls me out of my head. And when I'm in a physically anxious state, but my mind has already assessed we're threat level zero, we're okay, sometimes I still can't get my body to get on board and understand threat is gone.
Right.
We're okay.
That's when I'm
like
exercise.
Looking down at my chest and like, come on, fellas, like heart, like we're okay. Let's chill. And they're not wanting to cooperate, but I jump in and play a couple of days and it pulls me out of my head enough. It changes my breathing patterns and it really just helps me get that physical anxiety out as well. So that's kind of where I was thinking with the reading and the stuff. Like sometimes being in your head is great and sometimes I need to be out of my head and I need things to just chill and recalibrate, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's where I was thinking walking outside, you're getting a little bit of vitamin D. I personally love the feeling of the sun on my skin. It's warming. It's comforting. You get all of that while you're walking. And like you said, it is a slow, repetitive motion. You don't really have to think about it too much. So you can get up in your head if you need to. So maybe that's part of why they saw improved scores with that more than in the gym exercise. I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's a good segue into perceived stress.
You're welcome. I'm here for you.
Two studies assessed and they found no significant improvements for either aerobic or resistance only groups. I found that interesting.
I would have thought at least the aerobic might have, because you kind of wear yourself out.
Right.
What do you have to be worried about after a intensive HIIT session?
Well, even with resistance training, I mean that could be a meditative thing as well, because you're having to concentrate on what you're doing. So
yeah, form, and there's so many other things to think about that it, like my game, it pulls you out of your head because you have to focus on your form and what you're doing. Otherwise, you're going to hurt yourself.
Right. I was about to say, you don't have to focus on your form, but you really should.
Really should.
Yeah. So self-esteem, different from body image. Two studies looked at self-esteem, and one of them used combined exercise, and they showed improvements. So it's interesting as well, because, I mean, the theory that we were talking about earlier, you would think that any exercise would help with self-esteem.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, but that's okay. Life satisfaction. Two studies assessed life satisfaction. One found improvements with combined exercise. So it'd be aerobic, resistance, and flexibility training. So all three. Perceived pain. Four studies looked at perceived pain. Water aerobics improved pain scores compared to a no exercise control. Combined exercise did not change pain scores compared to controls. And then combined exercise with diet changes did improve pain scores compared to a diet only group.
I mean, I think most of that tracks.
I did find it interesting that combined exercise did not change pain scores compared to control group, but it did when it included diet changes.
That's true. Yeah, that is interesting.
And what diet changes was that? Was it like the anti-inflammatory diet? Was it, you know, low carb? I mean, I don't know. There's so many things out there.
And was it, it's perceived pain. Yeah.
All right. We got two more topics. We have motivation. So two studies looked at motivation. All exercise groups were shown to improve autonomous motivation.
It's so much easier to keep going than it is to get started. That's why my 5 day a week works, is it's my same routine, four work days. It's easy to remember. Even if I don't want to, I just tell myself, look, we're already awake. Let's just get up.
Yeah. Okay. Self-efficacy. Do you remember what self-efficacy is?
Your self-assessment of the effectiveness of the workout. Am I close?
It's your, basically your ability to believe in yourself.
Oh, that's so much simpler.
Yeah. So it's basically like,
I think I can.
I know I can do this. I feel like I can do this. I feel good about myself.
Got this.
So all exercise groups should.
When I go up to my 17 and a half pound rows, I got this. 15 reps. Mm-hmm. Come on. Let's go for it.
Exactly. Improve self-efficacy. All exercise groups did show improvements in self-efficacy. So in all three of the studies, they improved. So
the more you do it, the more you feel like you can do it.
Yeah. You feel efficacious. Anyway.
Effervescent? No, different word.
Okay. So that was all of the results. That took 4 hours for us to go through with you all. So I hope you barreled through with us.
Now, we don't usually have that many, so it's a nice treat.
It is.
Change of pace.
It is. So in the discussion, I found a little paragraph that I could not find a way to put it in my own words. So I'm just going to quote the paper. The systematic review suggests that exercise can effectively improve quality of life, but is not able to successfully reduce depression-related outcomes. It also shows that most psychological outcomes, i.e. body image, anxiety, perceived stress, life satisfaction, subjective pain, and some context-specific measures, are poorly studied and evidence either conflicting findings or null exercise effects to allow solid conclusions to be drawn. Evidence of positive exercise-induced changes in exercise self-efficacy and exercise autonomous motivation was found. And although limited, it was relatively consistent. So I think that is a great way to summarize the results.
So the depression studies did not specify if participants were clinically diagnosed with depression, did they?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So that could affect the results of the studies, couldn't it?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Because it could be people that they just claim to be depressed take part in the study.
I wonder if they were paid studies or had some sort of incentive, because mm-hmm. that's true. That would increase that.
Yep.
It would be interesting to see a comparison of the clinically diagnosed depression folks and the self-diagnosed depression folks, or even folks that maybe don't know for sure. I guess it's unknown depression is still self-diagnosed, because you at least have to think you have it.
Well, it could be like that you actually have more anxiety than you do depression. It could be that you have ADHD and not depression. It could be a lot of things. You could consider
they do tend to be comorbid, I found.
They do. Anyway, so there was another quote that I decided to put in my notes for the paper. The authors proposed that the feelings prior to or related to exercise could influence the extent to which they enjoyed exercise and perceived it as less fatiguing. I think that is 100% true. I mean, even with like the Borg scale, what you think about what you're doing and your enjoyment of it is going to change drastically how you perceive it to feel.
Oh, yeah. When I wake up and I'm still... If I wake up in the wrong part of my circadian rhythm, like, I just don't have it that day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get through it, and I do it, but...
And it's really hard feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not able to lift as hard as weights. You're not able to...
I can't keep up. I keep having to use my pause button.
Exactly.
So I can catch up.
Like, oh, I need a rest. Your rest is too short.
Yeah. I can't breathe. Mm-hmm. Ah. Well, it sounds like although there is not strong evidence of positive effects of exercise on the psychological components in overweight and obese individuals, there are still positive effects based on the results that you read that suggest that we should still encourage exercise, maybe even combined exercise specifically for weight management and psychological well-being. But I think we would both agree that more research is needed.
Hint, always. Hint
for all of you out there. Get on that.
Yes.
We would appreciate it.
No, I think this topic is very interesting. And I think that even those, this is a meta-analysis and systematic review, that the results were still showing.
So meta.
But the results still showed that more needs to be done. I mean, we had 5,000... 3,536 participants, and we still didn't have enough information to show.
Yeah, that's fair.
Some of these mental changes that we're wanting to see.
Well, cool. Good job.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Hopefully you all enjoyed that paper and the results that were found, and you can take it to, you know, yourself at work or just whatever you want to apply it to.
Yeah. If you've got clients and maybe they're having I call them my down days, where I just wake up for no reason. I just feel like crap. Like nothing happened. I just don't feel well. As you guys are, you know, ask them like, hey, how you feeling? Sometimes some people just need to talk about it. And like a hairstylist or whatever, you could just be that sounding board for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could help you get to know them a bit better, which might help you prescribe. I hate to say more effective than what you're already doing, but, you know, even if it's a smidgen, it's still more is more, but a more effective approach.
All right. Well,
okay. Thanks. Bye.
Laters. I love it.
Thank you for listening to the Exercise Science TLDR podcast show. If you want to hear more from us, please write a review and subscribe. Join us online at exerciscienctldr.com. Remember, if it's too long and you didn't read it, we read it so you don't have to.